August 9th, 2001. At 8 o'clock, Jillian waited for Arthur at a table at the Matchbook, sipping bubble water. He was almost certainly with Pamela. Their motion for reconsideration was due in the Court of Appeal soon. Across the room, Jillian felt a glance light on her. This was not an unaccustomed phenomenon. She was, after all, the notorious Jillian Sullivan. But when she peered that way, a dark, pretty woman, a few years younger than she, ventured the faintest smile. Not a lawyer. Jillian knew that at once. From the woman's tony looks, she was wearing a silk funnel-neck top they sold in the store for more than $300. Jillian might have thought she was a customer. But Jillian sensed that the memory under retrieval had far more dust on it than that. Then it returned in increments. Tina. Jillian did her best not to recoil, but it was only the fact that Arthur was probably on his way that allowed her to disregard an immediate impulse to flee. They had never dealt in last names. This woman was solely Tina, poor little rich girl in a high-rise on the West Bank, who supported her habit by selling. The maid actually answered the door when Jillian came by to score. She had entered a unique society, junkies of the professional class. The manners were better and the danger less, but this milieu was nearly as porous as the street. People sank out of sight or into the depths, and Tina was gone abruptly. She had been busted. So, Tina. They stared at each other across a distance of 40 feet, trying to make sense of the crazy turns of life and the burdens of the past. Then Jillian broke eye contact first, pained almost to the point of laughter by the wisdom of her reluctance to be seen in public. Arthur arrived then and immediately asked what was wrong. She was about to answer him frankly, but she could see a significant smile drain from his face at the sight of her. Not tonight, she thought. You look as if something good has happened, she told him. Good? It may be good. It's majorly confusing. They found Pharaoh. You're kidding. That's not the half of it. Muriel wrote me a letter. May I see? She had her hand out even before Arthur had fully removed the envelope from his pocket. Muriel had crafted the letter to be largely opaque, not to Arthur, who'd see through the obscurities, but to the Court of Appeals, to whom she knew the document would soon be displayed. But embedded in the details of various records concerning Pharaoh Cole, most of which Arthur had shown Jillian earlier in the week, were two matters of note. A summary of statements that Collins Farwell, Erno's nephew, had made in June while being served with a subpoena in Atlanta, and an acknowledgement that two police officers had recently identified photographs of Collins as Pharaoh's. My Lord, cried Jillian at that sentence. Her heart was racing. After a moment, she was struck by her own reactions, the fact she had no pretense of distance any longer. She asked Arthur what he was thinking. I'm not sure that what's going on in my head is called thinking. His chief disappointment seemed to be with Erno, who had told Arthur that Pharaoh was a cheap hustler who had disappeared long ago. We'll never touch bottom with the lies Erno told, Arthur said. It's like quicksand. We just keep sinking. I wonder, said Jillian. Erno was where her thoughts had gone too, and had lingered. Erno said he was out to protect Collins when he first involved Larry back in 1991. I wonder if he hasn't been protecting him all along. By shooting him in the back? Some protective uncle. I think I'd rather have a gift certificate. Jillian laughed. He was right. But not completely. Even there, though, at Ike's, Erno chose not to acknowledge that Pharaoh was his nephew. Have you wondered why? I can guess. Collins walked into Ike's holding a gun. Felon in possession of a firearm is a 2-year minimum mandatory. So Erno did protect his nephew, said Jillian. Arthur shifted a shoulder, granting she might have some kind of point. I just wonder, Arthur, if at the end of it all, Erno didn't maintain his own consistency with you. Your instinct was that Erno always told you the truth about one thing, which is that Rami is innocent. Oh, said Arthur, that. So, let's assume he had two dominating motives, exculpating Rami and protecting Collins. Arthur picked up Muriel's envelope and tapped it against his hand as he pondered. Soon, he was nodding. Our next move has to be to renew my motion to immunize Collins, right? You certainly want to hear from him. What do you think the chances are that the Court of Appeals will grant a motion to reconsider so we can pursue Collins' testimony? Not outstanding. It looks like an 11th-hour delay. You want a friendlier forum, if you can find one, Arthur. Someone who was inclined to believe Erno in the first place, I'd say. Harlow? Why not? He has no jurisdiction, for one thing. The case is in the Court of Appeals. But she had ideas about that, too. Arthur reached down for his briefcase to make notes. Together, they began to sketch out a motion. Each came up with phrases, and Arthur read the sentences back. The power of the law, whose drab reality was nothing more than words on the page, struck her then, not simply its determining role in the life of other citizens, but in hers